Welcome to Create Beauty Every Day, a podcast about art, life, and creativity. I'm Deanne Fitzpatrick, and this podcast is brought to you by hookingrugs.com. Be sure to go over to my website and find out all about rug hooking, creativity, and art. Create beauty every day. Welcome to Create Beauty Every Day. It's a podcast brought to you by hookingrugs.com. And I'm Deanne Fitzpatrick, the owner of hookingrugs.com. And today I have with me someone who grew up in the same place that I did. And she lives down the road, right? You live a couple hours away and you work in Moncton.
I work in Moncton and part-time in Dartmouth.
And her name is Ruby Murphy Collins. And I've known Ruby's family since I was 14 years old. So I'm excited to have you here today, Ruby.
I'm excited to be here.
You've done something wonderful, really. Like, you have broken some barriers, really, as a woman, mm-hmm. I would say.
Yes.
Would you say that's true?
Yes, I would say. Bit of a pioneer.
Yeah.
In that regard.
Yeah.
For working in an industry that has been traditionally underrepresented by females.
Yeah.
In the transportation industry.
Yes.
Certainly. Yeah. You know, our percentages run around 3% representation historically.
Is that right?
Which is very low. Numbers are climbing, but
yeah.
It's
What have they climbed to?
Well, right now I'm happy to say that in our organization we have 13% of our driving population is female.
Wow,
almost 50% of our executive team is female. 27% of our management group is female.
Good.
So we've really focused on changing the unconscious bias that exists in hiring.
Yes.
And sourcing out, you know, talent and looking at people who are probably looked over in their existing roles with other companies and promoting them and bringing them in and developing our own people in-house, giving
yes.
them opportunities.
Yeah.
So we've really focused on that over the last several years.
What organization do you work with, Ruby?
I work for Armor Transportation Systems.
And your role is?
I'm the chief operating officer.
Wow. Now, you would be the first chief operating officer outside the family or
They had actually the Armor was quite forward thinking. Wes
yeah.
Armor, who owned
yeah.
the company, he sold it 3 years ago
yes.
to Joe Shannon and the Shannon family, another great family,
maritime business family,
very progressive group. So Wes had a female president that worked for him for, you know, almost 30 years.
Right.
So that was what always attracted me to Armor and, mm-hmm. and Wes was because I knew that they didn't have those same kind of biases that women, you know, could rise to the senior ranks
yeah.
of the company. And
You saw an opportunity there for yourself.
I did, and I made sure that I got to know them. And mm-hmm. we did a lot of business together before mm-hmm. I joined them.
Yeah.
And I had decided that was where I wanted to, you know, go to work.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. We made it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when did you know that you were going to be, you know, the chief operating officer?
So when I went to work for the group initially, mm-hmm. I went in as VP of Operational Excellence
mm-hmm.
to, you know, kind of help sort of modernize some of the traditional business processes. And, you know, I was coming from another company that they had done business with, and we had gone through quite a transformation. So I had a lot of transformational experience. And when I came in as a VP, I didn't really kind of get the initial impact that I was looking for because I was a VP and the other VPs saw me as a peer and not someone that, you know, I was getting any traction with. So I was struggling when I first joined them
mm-hmm.
with that, you know, the change management wasn't happening as I wanted it to.
You like things to happen kind of fast.
I do. I'm a swift current. That's for sure. But the problem was, I was the first senior person they brought in from outside in a long, long time.
Right.
So that was a bit of a disturbance in the balance of things as well. But Wes and Vicky at the time saw that, you know, the challenges, and decided after, you know, 5 months that they were going to make me the chief operating officer, mm-hmm. and that would allow me the latitude to be able to get the rest of the organization to kind of get on board with where we wanted to go.
Yeah.
And that was a game changer for me.
That would have been, eh?
Yeah.
Were you surprised?
Yes. I was surprised that, you know, maybe, and in hindsight, that's what we talked about. We probably should have brought me in at that initially instead of as a VP.
Right.
But again, you think at the VP level that, you know,
you could make some impact.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, it wasn't too long, right? We were only, you know, 5 months in when mm-hmm. we realized, okay, let's reset things and do it this way. Mm-hmm. That was the game changer.
How many people work for the Armor Group?
We have about 2,000 employees.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot of people to
be responsible,
look after and manage and care for. And you can't possibly care individually for them all, but you have to make sure everything's in place to make sure that they are cared for, right?
So one of the things we look at it is, it's not 2,000 employees, it's 2,000 families that we care for.
2,000 families. Yeah. And it
that
is.
That we're responsible for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say that we've done a lot of work in the last couple of years, especially, you know, since the change in ownership. We've certainly enhanced a lot of our compensation packages. Mm-hmm. You know, done a lot of things with advancing our benefit programs and so I'm really pleased with the work we've done there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think the impact, like, so we grew up in the same place. We grew up in a very rural area,
mm-hmm.
a very sort of Irish Catholic community, probably like a little microcosm of Ireland, really,
yes.
I think it was.
Yes.
What do you think the impact of that growing up there has had on you as an employee of the Armor Group?
Well, I think, you know, it's humble beginnings,
mm-hmm.
right? And,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, there wasn't a lot of lucrative families in that, in the village where we came from, as you know, right?
Yeah.
People were humble, and they were, you know, there was a sense of community, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it, what you had, you shared.
Yeah.
And so I think that helped form a lot of my ability to, you know, be able to relate to all kinds of different people.
Mm-hmm.
I think so, anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I feel very connected to everyone in our business, all the vocations that we have. I have a deep understanding for people, I think, who struggle because we grew up. Our family is 12 kids,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, certainly we had our periods where we struggled. And, you know, but I never felt like I didn't have what I needed.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
You know, I know how to make do.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I know how to enjoy things when they're going well, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
For sure. Do you, so you have a very stressful job, really.
I would say yes.
Yeah.
There is a lot of pressure. You know, I like to say what we do in the transportation industry, we're first responders to
mm-hmm.
anything that happens in the economy.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, if there's the change in price of oil
mm-hmm.
has an immediate effect because we're putting that in our tanks. It has a major impact on our cost structure. Labor considerations mm-hmm. are significant for us.
Yeah.
You know, our aging population, and we're having a real hard time attracting young people into the industry. Middle East conflict.
Right.
You know, the has an impact on goods. You know, we have recessions. We're
mm-hmm.
immediately impacted. We have economic booms. We're immediately
mm-hmm.
impacted because we haul groceries, we haul medical supplies,
mm-hmm.
building materials, retail goods.
Mm-hmm.
So we're impacted by everything that happens in the economy, whether it's good or bad. So it's a daily, it changes daily. The landscape can change daily.
So how do you carry that into a Sunday afternoon barbecue? Like, how do you balance that out in your life?
I think, you know, the people who work in the business, the transportation business, people come into the business and they either stay or they leave very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones who stay are the ones who love to eat transportation. I think morning, noon, and night.
Is that right?
I think
that's
so.
It. Yeah.
I think that's what it is. It's not a job. It's a it's a passion. It's a vocation.
Yeah. Right.
And people are, you know, they live and breathe it every day.
I think that about truck drivers.
Yes.
I feel like, you know, when I go to the big stop and I'm there and I'm watching the truck drivers, they are a community within themselves,
oh,
right?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, like I can see that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
And and it is a very connected industry. And I think it's probably unique in that, you know, it's probably one of the only industries where your customer can also be your supplier and they can also be your competitor.
Right.
So it's a dynamic relationship to try and balance in that regard as well.
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't
it?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
You got to be careful what you're saying where.
So I like to say that we're neighborly. We're neighborly to everyone.
So one of the things I noticed that you've been sharing on your social media is about women and heart health. And that was one of the reasons why I want to talk to you today.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, you're very conscientious about that now.
Yes.
Yes.
So I was someone who thought I was invincible.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I turned 50. I was feeling good. I'm active. I mean, I work a ton. I drag and boat for fun, you know, recreational. You know, I don't smoke. I'm not, you know, I wouldn't say I'm skinny, but I'm not, you know, I don't have a weight problem in that it hinders my ability to do things. I was healthy. I was fast paced. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, a going concern. And then we were going through a major project at work and, you know, through an acquisition. And I was working a lot and I was tired. But of course you're, you know, 50, 51 and you're, you know, menopausal and you're tired and you're running a business and you're trying to keep your family going and you're trying to, you know, do your board work and your volunteer work and, you know, keep your friends, you know, on tap. So it was very, you know, it's busy. And but with the amount of extra work associated with the transaction we were going through, I was really tired. I was really run down. In fact, I said to my husband one night at the dinner table, I said, my God, the last time I was feeling this tired, I was pregnant. And I knew that, you know, at 51, I wasn't pregnant.
Yeah.
But and I said, this will be over soon. And, you know, I'll get back to a normal pace, right? Catch up on my sleep. And I remember thinking, you know, going into the weekend, I went to my dragon boat training that Sunday morning, worked out with the team, and I actually felt, gosh, I got through all the exercise. I felt good. And I was going to head to Moncton for, you know, my regular weekly trek. And when I got home, I went for coffee with the team, and then I came home and I said to Ken, I said, you know what, I don't feel great. I still don't feel good. I said, I think I want to sleep in my own bed tonight. And I said, I'll drive up early in the morning instead of going up, you know, Sunday afternoon, getting settled in and get my week planned out. So that afternoon, I kind of, you know, laid down and I was uncomfortable and really run down. And I had an upset stomach. And I have Crohn's too, so, you know, double whammy, but it's, you know, it's been manageable. It's been in remission for a long time, and every now and again I get a little reminder, and I thought, oh, I'm, you know, start have a little flare, because I had an upset stomach. And then, anyway, that night I went to bed, and I'd say about 1 o'clock in the morning I got up, got a wet face cloth, right? You know, the old Newfoundland cure, cold cloth for anything. So, you know, I'm walking around the living room, I got a cold cloth and I'm wiping my face down and I'm started to sweat profusely. And my arm had been tingling, you know, for a few days, right, off and on. And I thought I had done too much with the weights at the workout and I'd strained my arm. And anyway, that really sort of took hold. It went right up through my shoulder. My jaw started clenching. I felt like I was going to be sick. And my husband was like, I think you're having a heart attack. And I was like, go back to bed. You're foolish. I'm just, you know, I need to walk this off. I'll walk this off, right? You know, women, right? We never admit.
I can fix it.
We walk everything off, and a cold cloth will fix everything. Mm. So, and after a while, I'd lay down, and no, I'd feel worse. So I got up again. So I was back and forth. He was like, let me take you to the hospital. I was like, go back to bed, you fool. There's nothing. I'm not that sick. I don't need to go. So I went back to bed, and it was probably 4 o'clock, 4:30, I got up and I said, I'm going to get dressed. And, you know, I was heading to Moncton mm-hmm. for work. And I sat down and I said, I'm just going to flip open my laptop and check a few emails before I hit the road. And I couldn't get my arm to work, and, mm-hmm. and it was numb. And my jaw was so clenched. And I said to him, you know what? I'm not going to let you call an ambulance, but I'll let you drop me off. Mm-hmm. At Emerge, because I think this is
something's happening here.
Yeah, this is not. So I went to, and her littlest one was getting her wisdom teeth out that day. So I said, just drop me off. You go back home, of course, right? Take Sophia to the dentist and get her wisdom teeth looked after. I'll call you when I'm ready to be picked up. I'm sure they just got to give me a shot or something. So I sit there, and they took me right in, of course, because my heart rate was elevated. And I normally have a low heart rate. And they do this test to check your heart enzymes, and it was elevated. So they said that's usually a sign that there's some heart trauma, or there's mm-hmm. something, there's an event happening. So I'm like, what kind of an event, you know? And they said, well, seeing how you have Crohn's, sometimes the heart is encased in a bit of a film, and that can become inflamed. So I said, okay. When they came back, they said, we're going to do this heart enzyme test in another 3 hours, because usually if the heart has an event, this test will show a dramatic increase. So in 3 hours, it showed a dramatic increase in the amount of this troponin enzyme that was showing. So they said, we're going to send you down to the cardiac unit. They called and they said, no, send her down, because mm-hmm. this sounds like it might be something. And I'm in denial. I'm like, there's, you know.
Mm-hmm. You're still not really believing it.
I'm not having a heart attack or nothing. Anyway, so I went. They took me down to the cardiac unit. And then when I got to the cardiac unit, I got overcome, and because I had, you know, they said that the tear in my artery was a major tear in the secondary artery on the backside of my heart. They said it probably had occurred that morning, mm-hmm. the Sunday, at some point throughout Sunday.
Yeah.
So by this time now, my heart was struggling, and so when I got down to the cardiac unit, and then of course they were assessing me, I said to the lady, so this is Monday morning, right?
Right.
So I had been in.
You were there overnight.
Overnight. So I said, you know, when can I get out of here? Like when she said, we're admitting you, you're going up to the cardiac ward. You're going to be there for at least a week.
Mm-hmm.
You've had a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I didn't.
Yeah. You didn't really believe it.
I didn't believe it.
Yeah.
And then I said, there's no way I had a heart attack. I mean, and it was
so a heart attack isn't just a sudden pang and boom.
No,
sometimes.
No,
it's,
no.
There's a lot of different ways
there's
to have a heart
lot
attack.
Of, and this is what I learned. A heart attack, cardiac arrest is when your heart stops.
Right.
Right. But a heart attack is when your heart is underperforming.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So when it's underperforming, the rest of your body starts to struggle.
Right.
And that's what a heart attack is. A cardiac mm-hmm. arrest is a sudden arrest where it stops and they have to paddle you. And if it goes untreated, that's where it can go.
Yes.
So, you know, I was in shock and I went upstairs, and they, of course, couldn't tell me because, you know, I didn't present as the classic
mm-hmm.
heart attack. And there's a lot of mystery about female heart health, and there's absolutely no education on it.
Mm-hmm.
Even the doctors were very uninformed about what, you know, was happening to me. So when I went, they ended up doing dye test. And when I had that done, that's when they could see that, you know, the artery had ruptured. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was on the backside, and they knew right away what they call a SCAD, which is a sudden, a spontaneous, what did I say it was?
Spontaneous
cardiac dissection. There was no pamphlets on it. There was, some of the nurses didn't even know what it was. We're lucky in Halifax that the cardiac specialists there are part of this national group which are studying SCAD heart attacks. They told me that it happens between, a lot of the women present between the ages of 47 and 52, healthy, mm-hmm. fit, you know, otherwise no underlying heart conditions. It's not blocked arteries. It's not anything like that. It's just stress. Mm-hmm. Stress or overexertion can cause the arteries to rupture. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that's what leads to the cardiac arrest or heart attack. So I was really shocked. And sometimes you can have underlying, almost like an arthritis of your veins. Mm-hmm. That can cause it, but I didn't have any of those genetic defects. Mine was basically brought on by probably stress related, not looking after myself, so not hydrating enough.
Yeah.
You don't hydrate enough, your veins, you know, your veins collapse or they dehydrate, which can also cause, you know, tears and aneurysms to form. So it's very important. I learned a lot about staying hydrated.
But you stayed in your job.
I did.
Which continues to be stressful.
Yes.
But I'm sure that you've changed how you do things somehow.
Yes, I did. In fact, I went back to work like right away. I didn't mm-hmm. take any sick time. And I, you know, probably wasn't a wise thing to do.
Right.
A bit foolish, really. Mm-hmm. But what I do now is the hydration. Mm-hmm. I make sure that I hydrate. Mm-hmm. I'm drinking enough water to keep, you know, my veins, my arteries from, you know, dehydrating, which can cause a tear. I'm restricted to how much I can lift or, you know, anything over 25 pounds, mm-hmm. I shouldn't really carry.
Yeah.
Because you're straining, right? You're anything, any form of exercise that I would normally do, that would cause me to strain or bear down.
Yeah.
I can't do that anymore.
And how do you handle stress differently?
That one's a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
That one is a tough one. I do lots of walking.
You do lots of walking.
I do lots of walking. Yeah. And I like to, you know, because I'm walking and a healthy lifestyle is really key. Eating well, mm-hmm. Eating foods that, you know, are healthy.
Yeah. Good heart healthy foods. Good heart, lots of vegetables and fruit. And,
salads, chicken, salmon. That help keep you nourished but don't cause any, you know, strain on your body. That was an important thing. Restrict the amount of alcohol.
Yeah.
Right? You know, certainly don't, you know, when you're younger and you have a wild weekend, well,
you're done with those.
I gotta be moderate now.
Yeah.
No more, you know, everything in moderation.
Everything, yeah.
And in moderation. Okay. But I haven't solved the problem of sleep yet.
Yeah.
So, and look, weed, thank God they legalized it because, you know, it helps relax.
Yeah.
Right?
There's
versions of that that,
that work for you.
Help relax.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you can relax, it's almost better than sleep, you know.
She lies to herself. But no, my friend told me that too, like years when I was going through periods where I couldn't sleep well. She said, well, then it's just important to rest your body.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's solitude. I love my solitude because it, like during the day, there's no time to think. Right. You're moving from, you know, one.
You're going from meeting to person.
Or one situation to another, or you're working on things. And it's, you know, some of it's fun. Some of it's intense. Some of it's, you know, just business as usual. Or you're dealing with family or you're dealing with all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So, solitude for me is a great time
yeah.
for me to be able to organize my thoughts and think and plan.
Mm-hmm.
And usually my stress is heightened when I haven't been able to plan accordingly.
Yeah. I understand that completely.
Pre-plan is very important.
Yeah. I don't know how, like I was saying last week, I had a very busy week. We went from one thing to another to one thing. Life went by very fast,
mm-hmm.
but I missed something. You know, I missed that downtime where I'm thinking and planning and yeah. walking and being by myself. And yeah. there's really something about being alone with yourself
yeah.
that lets you sort of structure your life.
It's wellness.
Yeah, it's part of our wellness. You're right.
Like that 5 a.m. club. I don't know if you've heard
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, I've read about been, that. Yeah.
I've mm-hmm. always been. And so for me, I don't stress about waking up at 4 a.m. or 4:30 mm-hmm. because I look at, okay, now I can go and have my quiet time. And I love to read,
mm-hmm.
right? That's yeah. a nice distraction for my brain
yeah.
to be able to focus. I can't sit still, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got to be doing things. So reading yeah. allows me to feel like I'm still doing something.
Yeah.
But it's a diversion, right?
Yeah.
It's fun. It's... So that's another one I like to read. That's
reading and walking. We have a lot in common right there,
reading
Ruby. These are my two things.
Yeah.
Yeah, they make a big difference in
yeah.
my life.
Walking is, you know, I like to walk. I like to think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like my early morning. I go to bed early.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Cause yeah.
I'm usually.
You're in bed probably by 9 o'clock most nights.
Oh, absolutely.
Nights. Yeah.
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 For sure.
So.
But, yeah.
But that's kind of how I've handled it. It's... Mm-hmm. The thinking that I can't do everything, you know.
Yeah.
That took a little bit of getting used
yeah.
to.
Yeah. Did you? You must have struggled with that a little bit afterwards, did you?
I did.
Yeah.
But I was so weak when I finally got out of the hospital and
yeah.
I went home. That's what they told me. Just try and walk a little bit every day.
Yeah.
To build up, and I went for cardiac rehab for several months to
right.
try and, you know, have faith and probably get some confidence back in my body and what I could do, how
right.
I could push it.
Yeah.
But I remember when I got home and they said, go for a little walk every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the first day, Ken took me out for a walk and I got to the bottom of my driveway and I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I struggled.
Yeah.
So I basically cried like a baby and,
yeah.
you know, hauled myself back into the house and
yeah.
couldn't believe how weak I had become.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
how, you know, run down I was
yeah.
because I was someone who thought I was invincible.
Yeah.
Right.
Did that lead any, like, did you have any bouts with depression during that period, do you think? Or just sadness?
Sadness.
Or
I would
sadness.
Say sadness. And I was afraid because
yeah.
I didn't want to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
So I was afraid because I had discounted the whole heart attack thing
yeah.
pretty significantly. And
yeah.
I was foolish in doing that.
Yeah.
And then when I got home, of course, you know, Ken had to go out and run errands and I was afraid to be alone.
Yeah, I understand
that. What if something
that.
Happened to
it's
me?
It's an anxiety. It's
and
a
he's
natural.
Gone. And
yeah.
so the first couple of times that
yeah.
he, that I was home, you know, some of my girlfriends would come over
mm-hmm.
so he could go and run to the market and
yeah.
do whatever, or
yeah.
take the kids wherever.
Yeah.
Because I'm someone who.
I know.
You know. That
yeah.
was
just not like you at all.
Not at
no.
all. And I couldn't
you
believe.
You sort of had to nurture yourself back
yes.
to life in a way.
Yeah.
Not to life.
Well,
but
it's okay to say I'm not okay.
Yeah.
I learned it's
it
okay
is.
To say I'm
it
not
is.
Okay.
It is okay.
Because I never would have admitted that. I would have gone to my grave
yeah.
know, before I would have admitted that I wasn't
know.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it took me
that's
a little
right
while.
Foolish, isn't it?
It
when
is.
You think about it.
Well,
like,
I almost
how foolish we are, because I was like that too.
I almost put
you
myself
know?
In the grave.
In the grave.
By
yeah.
not accepting it.
Yeah.
And I remember I had a few episodes, because what's happened is from this, I have my microvascular angina now.
Mm-hmm.
So my heart is always kind of reminding me that it's there,
mm-hmm.
right? You don't feel your heart.
Now, no, you don't.
Since
yeah.
since then, I have periods where it aches sometimes.
Yeah.
And I have my nitroglycerin.
Yeah.
And I hesitated taking it. And I remember the doctor saying, I've prescribed it to you, take it, it will help. And,
yeah.
But it was just this phobia and this anxiety that I had that, you know, anyway, it was weird. So I got
thinking
over
you're
that.
Too strong for that. You
exactly.
don't really need that. Other people need that,
yeah.
but you don't.
Nitroglycerin was for old people. Like,
yeah, that's how you thought.
Really?
But now you think differently.
I think differently. And now I spray it whenever I need it and give myself a little shot.
Yeah.
And I'm okay. But it took me, like, I'm having these debates with myself
yeah.
about, you know, is do I need it? Should I take it?
Mm-hmm.
And a few times I actually got to the point where Ken took me to the hospital and they would, you know, they would give me nitro or and they'd
right.
say, you have to take your nitro.
Right.
And early on, there was a couple of visits where they said, you have to take your nitro. And if your nitro doesn't fix you, then you did
then
the right. And they always say, you always do the right thing coming in. And they always say, do not drive. Call an ambulance.
Yeah.
Like they were pretty adamant yeah. about that as well. It's not something we can. But women die of embarrassment.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
they just won't admit that they need help.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time they admit it, there's damage
yeah.
done. And we hurt ourselves by doing that.
We need to listen to our bodies.
Yes.
And we need to listen to our healthcare providers.
Yes.
Really.
Yes.
Both.
Yeah.
You know? And to the people who love us, really. You
yes.
should have probably listened to Ken at about 1 a.m.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. yeah. In hindsight, and the doctors
yeah.
remind me that
yeah.
you know, don't hesitate. Don't drive.
Mm-hmm.
Call 911
yeah.
They said if you ever feel any of those symptoms again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like you said, when you're used to feeling invincible,
mm-hmm.
you know, I grew up where, you know, everyone around us was worked to death.
They did. They just worked their fingers to the bone.
Really, they did. I mean,
those cold hands from working in the fish plant. I can
yes,
see those hands.
Yes, that was my mother.
Coming up the hill, carrying their knives.
Yes.
Did your mother work in the plant?
She worked in the plant.
Yeah.
She worked at the Star at night.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
she worked
like,
at the Star Hall.
Yes.
Yeah.
God,
love her.
God,
yeah.
she, you know,
yeah.
I grew up where people just did not, you know.
No.
They fell down, right?
Yeah.
They didn't lay down.
No. It's true. Yeah.
So
people worked.
I think that was part of,
mm-hmm.
you know, and again, admitting that it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah.
And
an
to say
thing.
I'm not okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that story with us, because I think we all learn from that, you know, that it is okay not to be okay. I do have one more question for you.
What's that?
And I don't even know how to form this in it. But I really want to know what you think about women and power, because you're in a very powerful role.
I don't see it as powerful. I see it as, I always say to the people, you know, the team that are closest around me, that we're running the business together.
Mm-hmm.
I see it as a community of intelligence.
Yeah.
I don't know
a community
how
of
everything works in that organization. I can't possibly.
No.
And I've hired an incredible amount of intelligent people who are specialists in what
mm-hmm.
they do, and I rely heavily on them. For me, I see it as a collaboration more so than power.
That's great.
That
I love
to me,
that answer.
Power,
yeah.
And I've been in organizations, and I've been around some, you know. And you're right; it is a powerful role.
It is a powerful role.
It is a powerful role.
But the most important part of that role is the responsibility, right?
Right.
More important than.
And
power.
I've worked for people who have been powerful and have exercised power over people, and
mm-hmm.
I never liked it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I like to be firm but fair,
mm-hmm.
and like I said, I like to rely on people. I take their counsel very seriously.
Yeah, a community of intelligence.
Yes.
I think really if all organizations looked at things that way, it would be so healthy, wouldn't
mm-hmm.
it? It would be so great.
Yeah.
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 I love that.
Labor
Do you think women are more inclined to look at a community of intelligence than a hierarchical model? Or is it just changing in the workforce in general now?
I think there's probably, you know, the culture is determined by the leadership
mm-hmm.
in place, right? And I think if you have a collaborative leadership environment, that women will do very well.
Yeah.
Because they'll be so sought out, right? People right. will want to know, just through that collaborative environment, they have a fighting chance,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
If it's, you know, more of a hierarchy situation, it's very hard to be heard and to be seen. And you have to have some very, you know, good people in those leadership roles
mm-hmm.
to be able to open doors and speak for you when you're not there and, mm-hmm. you know, be able to champion for you. And I've been lucky. I've had some very, very good male role models that have realized my ambition and were not threatened by it. Mm-hmm. Thought, oh my God, here's someone who's, you know, going to work like a racehorse for us. Let's just yeah. give her as much as we can and we'll all be better off for it. So, you know, they were smart in that way, mm-hmm. right?
So now I know that you're going to work for a few more years, but what do you do with that ambition when you're like, you can't just put it in a box, right?
No. And it's funny. I had a flu there this winter. I never get the flu. And I was home on the couch for the whole weekend. And it was, you know, I was being a bit of a sook.
Hmm.
I said to Ken, my God, I think I might get used to being home with you like this. This has been great.
I'll have another cup of tea.
And then he says to me, yeah, the only way that's going to work for me is if you're deathly ill, though.
So it wasn't good. Wasn't good for him.
Not for him. So, but I think there's lots of things I want to do. And I think when I finally, you know, look at packing in the day-to-day race that I'm in right now, I'd love to be able to support women in business
mm-hmm.
And work with women entrepreneurs,
yeah.
you know, who can't afford, their business can't afford a COO or a VP of finance
yeah.
or whatever. But it doesn't mean that their business doesn't need strategic help or, you know,
organizational help.
Exactly. Yeah. Some of that stuff. And, you know, I'd love to be able to work with some organizations in that kind of a part-time thing.
Yeah.
And maybe I'd love to teach a course a week, one course a week, maybe at the mm-hmm. college, who knows?
Yeah.
You know?
So you're thinking.
Supply chain or
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah.
And because yeah. I enjoy that. And mm-hmm. I do work with a lot of boards in the industry.
Yeah.
And I do, you know, I do enjoy that
yeah.
Giving back. And I think, you know, my experiences, if I can help some people overcome things just by letting them know how, you know, I dealt with situations or some of the things I've seen, or help give them some tools in their toolbox to be able to maneuver things.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think I'll do when I retire.
Yeah, that sounds great. Sounds like a good yeah. plan.
And maybe write a book. I've always said yeah. I wanted to write a book. I've mm-hmm. got a lot of stories.
Yeah.
That and you know, as you're going through things, and you tell people, you know, your experiences, you don't realize how much you've experienced mm-hmm. and just how valuable that is to people until you hear and see their reactions.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized, yeah, maybe I should. There's a lot yeah. I've seen and a lot I've done, and I'd yeah. love to be able to.
And there's a lot you can teach in a book, too.
Capture that. Well, yeah. I love books, right?
Yeah, me too.
I love books. You know, I'm a book junkie, so.
So I love talking to you today because it really makes me realize, like, in all the different ways that people actually create beauty every day. Do you know what I mean? Like
mm-hmm.
we think of it as making art, but, you know, taking a, you know, a hard ass business, an old business,
oh,
and
it is.
making it about, you know, a community of families
mm-hmm.
and thinking about it differently. That's creating beauty every day in the world. So
yeah.
thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
I really enjoyed this conversation, and it's so nice to just be with you in the room.
Well, thank you for having me. And like I said, I look at your art on my wall behind my
credentials right.
every day, and I tell you, I love it.
Yeah, that was the gift from your husband when you
yes.
got your job. Yeah.
Yes.
And your husband, I know too. I've known since I was in grade two.
Yes.
He was in my class.
Yes. Yeah.
And he's a beautiful man.
He is. He is my gift from the universe, I say that.
He is a good soul.
Yes.
He really is.
We'll be married 30 years in June.
Great.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
So that's Ruby Murphy Collins, and I'm Deanne Fitzpatrick. We're both from Placentia Bay, Newfoundland, and we're proud of it, aren't we?
We sure are.
We sure are.
It's always home. It'll always be home.
It's always home. And this was Create Beauty Every Day, the podcast brought to you by HookingRugs.com. Thank you for listening to Create Beauty Every Day. The podcast was brought to you by HookingRugs.com. Be sure to go over to HookingRugs.com and learn all about how you can create beauty every day.